Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. The nuances of the double switch might be too complicated for the casual baseball fan, but a loudmouth saying crazy things to the fans, the media, the Twitter sphere, that appeals to everyone. For a while, that is. Indeed, new Miami Marlins manager Ozzie Guillen is baseball's most outspoken skipper since Casey Stengel, but his leadership style isn't always appreciated by the players and front office types who have to work with him. The Chicago White Sox knew what they were getting when they hired the brash Venezuelan and longtime shortstop to be their manager, and Guillen didn't disappoint, bringing the South Side its first championship in 88 years. But by the end of his tenure in 2011, Guillen was openly sparring with general manager Kenny Williams and decided to leave Chicago with a year left on his contract. The marriage was finally over. Guillen's transition to Miami has been bumpy already. The season was only days old when he was suspended 5 games for making pro-Castro comments as the Marlins hoped to lure fans to their new Little Havana ballpark. Guillen's intensity is the subject of Chicago Sun-Times columnist Rick Morrissey's new book, Ozzie's School of Management: Lessons from the Dugout, the Clubhouse, and the Doghouse, which is published by Times Books. Rick Morrissey, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thanks for having me.
Dealing with this guy day in and day out as a columnist in Chicago, did you enjoy those interactions, or for, like many people, did it get old for you too?
You know, most of the time I enjoyed it. I find him really an interesting guy to watch and listen to and try to analyze why he was, you know, saying certain things or doing certain things. And, you know, most of the time it's just because he thought it and he basically had to say it. And other times, you know, he would do something to maybe protect his team when it wasn't playing well or to take attention off of a player who was struggling, that sort of thing. But I'll tell you what, I miss him as a newspaper columnist because I could go to the ballpark on any day, and if I, you know, couldn't come up with something to write about, I would just go and stand by him, and people would ask him questions, and eventually, you know, he would say something that would lead to a pretty good story.
You don't go as far as this in your book in making the connection, but I was wondering, reading this, whether there was some sort of relationship between his childhood, without his parents really around and out of school by the age of 13 or so, and his need to be getting this attention. You make the point that he's much more interesting when talking to a group of reporters than having a one-on-one.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a neediness there. And yeah, I mean, every reporter, that's sort of, you know, you try to get a one-on-one interview because you think you have better questions to ask and you're going to get something that nobody else is going to get and have a great story. But halfway through the season, last season, I realized that, you know, as I was going over my notes, he was so much better when there was a crowd, and he liked having a crowd around. He really brightened up. And so, you know, if you look at him, I guess that makes sense. I mean, he's a guy who knows how to entertain people. And the flip side of that is he seems to like to be alone a lot at home, or at least be with his family and his sons, and doesn't want to always be out carousing. He's not Billy Martin. I think people have that image of him from seeing him scream at umpires on ESPN or reading about these outbursts. But he's really not that way. He's not a guy who's going to be in a bar getting in fights like Billy Martin was. So I guess what I set out to do was give people a better idea of who this guy is beyond maybe that kind of cartoonish, you know, perception there is of him out there, or caricature. And I'm not saying that outrageousness isn't there, because it is. That's very much a part of him, but there's more there too.
So is there a method to the madness, or is that sort of a convenient way of explaining away some of Ozzie's antics?
Well, I think there's a little of both there. I do think there are times when he purposely concocts a situation or blows up over something to, you know, take attention away from his team when it's playing poorly, or from a player. You know, it's not like it's the greatest management secret in the world that other people haven't done before, but it works for him. I mean, you think you're writing about a team that's lost 8 games in a row, and suddenly for a day and a half, you're writing a news cycle or whatever, you're writing about or broadcasting about a guy who's said something that's crazy.
Because you know why? Because when we play good, they send those guys to this and talk to them like a heroes. When we, I'm the one who got to sit here talk to you guys.
On the flip side, I do think it's a convenient excuse when the whole that's Ozzie being Ozzie, as if there's not any responsibility there for things he says. And sometimes he just says crazy things, like he did with the Fidel Castro comments before the season. I mean, you don't go to Miami. Your first one of the first things you do in the season is to express admiration for Fidel Castro, in a place that's the Cuban American capital of the United States. So, you can say that's Ozzie being Ozzie, but you know what? It demands a little better explanation than that.
Let's talk about his baseball record itself. Now, one thing he will never have taken away from him is that he was the manager who won the World Series with the White Sox, breaking one of maybe less spoken about than the others' curses in baseball, but really one of the longest and most painful streaks of not being able to win a World Series. In 2005, they swept the Astros, and he should get the credit for that. But you look at his stats, he's about a .500 manager all in all. No one would ever think about that with just how much bravado and noise there is from Ozzie Guillen to kind of look at the stats deeper down. Do you think he's a good manager?
I do. I do think he's a good manager. And I mean, I did the same thing you did. I mean, you go back and you look at that record, whatever it is, it's fairly close to 500. And you're thinking, well, geez, I'm making the case that this guy's a very good manager and underappreciated. And yet there's this record right there. But he didn't have really talented teams either. I think if you looked really closely, it's not as if he's had phenomenal teams, just laden with talent. This team that he has now with the Marlins is as talented as he's had, probably. And even the 2005 team that won the World Series didn't have a murderer's row. You know, it wasn't that type of thing. It got hot, and it was unbelievably hot, and got great pitching in the World Series. So he'd be the first one to argue that, it's players. Players are what makes great teams, and it's why he gets frustrated when certain managers or coaches are held up as, somehow having the key of wisdom, when in fact they had Michael Jordan or they had, Kobe Bryant, and he Phil Jackson is one of the guys that he gets a little frustrated about. Tony La Russa, same thing, good players. So I think there's some of that there, but I do think he's kind of underappreciated. But again, everything with him circles back to the idea that this big personality of his tends to overshadow everything. And I think he's sensitive that maybe he doesn't get his due as a manager, but in a lot of ways he's to blame for that, because of, you look at the thing that makes the loudest noise, and it's his mouth, not his record.
And I think it's fairly obvious that if he talks long enough, will eventually contradict himself, and sometimes you make the point that could be 2 minutes later. He's talking about how you've got to have the right players, as you mentioned, no one can win with a bad team. And then he makes the point, any idiot can't manage this team, and if Peter Gammons, the esteemed baseball writer, were to sit on the bench, I'd be 3 innings ahead of him in how I'm managing a game. So, I mean, I guess it's hard to really rate where he is in a job that he's sometimes said isn't as important as he truly believes it is.
Right, right, and you're right. I mean, if you did stand by him long enough, and I remember thinking this in the first or second year of when he was manager with the White Sox, that is true. I mean, he contradicts himself, and you really have to kind of follow up. You got to wade through all he's saying and ask more questions to really get at the heart of what he's trying to say. But I think deep down he does think being a manager is important, and it has an important role. And it's not always what you see on the field. The vast majority of it is behind the scenes and how you're dealing with players and trying to boost their confidence and that sort of thing.
Was the relationship with the White Sox truly done at 2011? It seems like he could have managed. He had a deal for one more year. He could have come back. The Central is certainly winnable this season. Detroit hasn't been as good as expected, and maybe the White Sox are in the playoffs and he doesn't have to go to Miami.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think from that standpoint, looking at it that way, yeah. I mean, he could have stayed. He had a year left, as you said. Kenny Williams, the general manager, would have been okay with it. Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, wanted him back. But I think everybody deep down knew it was time for him to go, that it was better for everybody if he moved on. There had been too much drama the last couple of years between Williams and Ozzy involving Ozzy's sons, and it wasn't a good working relationship. There was too much tension, and you know, we talked about that neediness and that broken family that Ozzy came from. It was very much a sibling rivalry between Kenny Williams and Ozzie Guillen over who had, you know, the favor of Reinsdorf. And not to get all, you know, pop psychologist on you, but I think that was it. And Ozzie wanted a new contract extension, and you know, that's how people in sports, you know, judge themselves, rate themselves, is how they're paid and how much they're loved is the dollar amount. And the Sox wouldn't give them an extension. So, you know, it was one of those trades that was good for all teams. The Sox are in first place by 2.5 games right now, and the Marlins are tied for first place. And, you know, it's all good.
Guillen came to America to play baseball when he was 17. It's all he's known. He makes a big show of saying that he's going to retire young. He wants to go to Spain. He doesn't care. Yeah. He doesn't need it. Do you buy that?
Don't buy it. I do not buy it. I don't know what he would do with himself. I mean, I think he has a lot of other interests outside of baseball. There's no doubt. He reads. He watches news shows. He loves bullfighting, but I just don't know what gives him what would give him the pleasure. And by pleasure, I mean where he could find an audience like this. I mean, and I've had people ask me, well, was he like this as a player? And I'm like, yeah, he was like this as a player, but nobody was coming. It wasn't as if everybody was coming up to him every day. As a manager, you know, during the season, twice a day, you're meeting with the media. So it's a forum for him, and yeah, he probably gets sick of it, but it's a real outlet for him. I don't know what else he would do outside of being a baseball commentator. So I think he's in this for the long haul.
We've been speaking with Chicago Sun-Times columnist Rick Morrissey. He's the author of Ozzie's School of Management, Lessons from the Dugout, the Clubhouse, and the Doghouse, about now new Miami Marlins manager Ozzie Guillen. The book is published by Times Books. Rick, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.